This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I want to let you know that the first part of the Greg Tucker Show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you're looking for somebody to come in and take care of you while you're at your home where you can't do the normal duties that you're used to, or you have relatives that are having that problem, give them a call. It's 713-4639, or the website is www.athomecaretennessee.com, and they'll come in 24/7, take care of all the homework for you, make sure that you're settled in and you can do all the things that you want to do while you're still at home, and you don't have to worry about leaving your castle there. And I guarantee you, if you'll call that number, 713-4639, you'll be glad you did. And today is Tuesday. It's not Belgium, but it is Tuesday, and we have Mr. Greg Tucker on again today, our local historian elite.
It'd be a good day to be outside.
It would be.
This morning was beautiful. It was cool. It reminds you of what's coming.
What is coming?
That winter is what they call it.
Don't say that word.
But you know, it warms up, and we get a beautiful afternoon. Makes you want to get out and do things. And probably as soon as I leave the station, I'm going to go to the farm and do some things.
You know, if I didn't have a job right now, and I was thinking about some type of employment for this time of year, I think I would become a goat man. I would like to travel along the side of the road, meeting everybody, selling my wares, and letting everybody get to know me.
If you were the goat man this time of year, you'd be heading south, because he did he probably went all over the country, but I know from our contacts that he would go all the way on up into Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, mm-hmm. and then he'd come back through Middle Tennessee. So we'd probably see him coming down from Lebanon or Gallatin up that way. He was smart. He didn't waste time on the big cities. He went to the towns like Murfreesboro, Shelbyville, and such, where people would be intrigued and friendly.
You think he's kind of like maybe the geese and the hummingbirds? As soon as the weather starts changing, he just gets that feel, and he has to travel.
Well, anybody who lives outdoors 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, has got to react to the seasons and the feel. I mean, you just become a part of things. And, you know, that was something I really enjoyed when I came back to Rutherford County and got into farming. You start, most important thing on the news at night is the weather.
That's right.
And you start feeling it, keeping up with it, and you're much more aware of the season change. It's not just a matter of looking out the window and seeing the leaves are beginning to turn. I mean, you kind of turn with it, and you know your activity. One of the things I like best about the fall is I start to catch up at the farm, because things stop growing.
Mm-hmm. And you can. What do you catch up on?
Oh, the bush hogging, the trimming, and that kind of thing. And there's this lull in between working hay and bringing it in, and when the time when you start putting it out. So, you know, it's kind of a catch-up time. And
do you have a well at your farm?
Well, I got several wells. I got two.
Have
that
you ever
I rely
had a problem with them freezing?
The wells?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, the pipes that run in the well.
Yeah, I have had, in fact, it was last year or the year before, the heater system went out in the pump house, and boy, that makes a mess.
I've had that. I'm so stupid that every year I'll wait till the first really bad freeze, and there it goes.
All right. Well, I've already got mine set up, so hopefully it'll work for us. And we're expecting a caller. I think we've actually found somebody that had some personal experience with the goat man.
Those yes. Background. And we're talking about close friends. And this gentleman calling, I believe it's the same one, is a close friend of mine, Mr. Tom Autry. And let's see if that's who we got. Caller, welcome aboard.
Hey, Truman.
It is Tom.
You got me, buddy.
Yes.
Tom, how you doing?
Pretty good. Greg, you all right?
Oh, we're doing real well. We were just talking about migrations and transients, and remembering what we talked about last time, the goat man. Now, get a little background. You actually are from that part of Georgia where the goat man had his base of operations. Isn't that right?
Well, I tell you what, I was born and raised, well, born in Columbus, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And my papa and granny raised me, as I told Truman. And mm-hmm. we moved up to Jeffersonville.
Yeah.
Papa did a little sharecropping when I was in the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. Mm-hmm. But in the fifth grade, I went to Jeffersonville Elementary School.
Uh-huh.
And I went to school with the goat man's son.
You remember his name?
Well, back then, you know, I knew him as Dan.
Uh-huh.
But his real name is Albert Eugene.
Yeah, that's what I had come across.
Right. Huh. He's the only son that I know of. But, mm-hmm. you know, now I've done some research, and, you know, gosh, I didn't realize there was that much stuff out on the Internet. And I've even read an excerpt from a book that was written by a guy named Darrell Patton.
Yeah, I've seen
who
that.
Who I think just maybe had sat in his living room and decided, well, this is what I think the goat man ought to be like. This is the way I'm going to portray him.
Well, now, you've got personal experience. That's what we'd
Which
like to hear
nothing
about.
Nothing like I remembered. This guy says that he lived in a one-room shack. He did not. He lived in a little house.
Right. Well, describe what you remember of the farm or the area where
you
lived.
Along Highway 80, there, that's the road that goes from Jeffersonville to Macon, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Ches had a stretch of land. It couldn't have been more than maybe a couple of 3 acres.
Now, Ches is his nickname. His name Ches was Charles is, McCartney.
Charles McCartney's nickname was Ches.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I only knew him as the goat man.
Mm-hmm.
And never officially met the man, although I saw him several times as we dropped off his son.
Now, who's dropping off the son?
The school bus.
Oh, so you actually rode on the school bus
with the
son. Rode
on the school bus. In other words, he sat with me the first time he got on the school bus.
Uh-huh.
Bus the first day I went to the fifth grade. He sat with me because when he got on the bus, all the little old girls, you know, ooh, ooh, what is that smell?
I assume.
And you know, if you've been around goats, you're going to smell like a goat.
Uh-huh.
So I told him, I said, well, come on, you sit here. And so, hey, he sat by me. Of course, I smelled like a goat when I got out of the bus. But anyway, he went to school. He wasn't in the same grade I was in,
mm-hmm.
but we rode the same school bus.
Well, now, when you'd let him off at his house, what do you remember seeing in the area there?
Well, they had a little church.
Mm-hmm.
Ches had built a little church, and then there was a little stall or a stable, and then there was a house. Looked like it might have been, it was a quaint little old house, you know, probably the size of the one I live. I live in a two-bedroom house,
mm-hmm.
an old farmhouse. And that's the way I remembered. He had his goats, you know, he had a fence between the stable and the house, and the stable and the little church, or the little house of worship. It had a little steeple on it, and we'd let him off there, you know, and pick him up there every morning.
Well, I know.
I've seen the goat man, I've seen him out. But mm-hmm. like I say, I've never officially met the man.
Well, you know, he would introduce himself as Reverend.
Right.
And apparently he had his own little congregation there, huh?
Right. I can't think of what they... I read something somewhere. Greg, you stirred up a lot of interest in me that, you know, that I hadn't thought of in years.
Well, now, what did you, when you rode the bus with the boy, what did you talk about? Did you talk about goats?
No, we didn't talk a whole lot about goats. Of course, goats came up, and we talked about them. But, you know, he was just like any other kid. You know, he had chores to do just as I did. You know, he milked the goats.
Did he ever talk about going on the road with his father?
Well,
apparently in his teen years.
Not then he didn't. Yeah. I don't think he was going on the road with his father.
Yeah, I think he was teen years or young adult.
Right, it was. It had to be. You know, of course, what I've read, it did. But you know, it was just like a regular family. Now, I don't remember him talking anything about his mother or about a woman.
Did you ever see or notice?
No, never seen a woman around.
Mm. Yeah. Well, did they have, I know he traveled in a goat cart. Or was
in a goat cart. Mm-hmm.
I take it those were probably there when he was there.
They was there. They were there. They yeah. were out between the stall and the house.
Did you see any motor vehicles at all?
Not the first one. Not the first one.
And what kind of student? Do you have any idea what kind of a student the son was?
Evidently, he was a fairly decent student.
Yeah.
You know, he brought his books home, just as I did. You know, best friends? No. Good acquaintance? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Was. You know, and I guess because the other, you know, the other kids on the bus kind of shunned away from him. You know, I've always took up for an underdog. You know, I've been in that class myself.
Did the people in the town seem to know his reputation?
Well, you know, I don't think his reputation was as such as it is today, Truman, then.
Uh-huh.
He traveled, but I don't think he really began. You know, this has got to be back in 47.
Right.
Yeah, it was 10 years later that he was still on the road.
Right, right. That's when he was doing the biggest majority, because I don't remember him going on the road the whole school year.
Hmm.
For who would the boy stay with?
Yeah, I don't know.
And the boy was in school all year.
Well, I was wondering, if he was somewhat of a preacher, did he mix his travel and sales, his entrepreneur type things, with actually having preaching while he was out on the road?
Well, we had one clipping up here where he came in on a Friday, and on Saturday it was announced in the paper that he would hold services there beside the road down on the Church Street, Shelbyville Pike, the Sunday morning, and then pull out on Monday and head on his way.
Mm-hmm. I read that. You know, I read that in an excerpt, Greg, and something else that I read too said that he had covered 49 of 50 states.
I guess he had trouble getting to Hawaii. Huh?
Well, that's what he said. He said the reason he didn't go to Hawaii that he figured his goats would eat all the grass skirts off the hula girls.
I wonder if he walked the goats all the way to Alaska. That's kind of hard to believe.
Well, you know, he was, you know, from what I read, he was known to spin quite a yarn sometimes.
Yeah.
This guy, Patton, that wrote this book, claimed that he went to the nursing home and that Chez told him his life story. It's supposed to be his biography.
I have actually seen some videotape taken in the nursing home, and of course he's 90 some years old and is kind of slow and gets confused.
Right.
So that would be interesting and useful, perhaps not as accurate or detailed as some of the earlier records.
You know, I also read, Greg, one of the comments on something that I was reading on the internet about him, and it talked about this guy was 44, and this was the comment was made in 2010. He said that he grew up in Jeffersonville in Twiggs County, Georgia. mm-hmm. you know, which is Jeffersonville. That Twiggs is the county. He grew up there, and he was 44 now, and he said, I can remember my dad taking me to see the goat man one day, and as we walked in, I remember a bubble gum machine, just as you when you walked in the living room, there was a bubble gum machine. And he says, I passed by the area where he lived today, and it's nothing more than just grown up. And he said, there should be, ought to be some sort of marker put there, because it is a historical place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I couldn't agree with him more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they didn't start living in a bus until his house burned down. Hmm. And oh, then they had an old school bus that they brought out. And of course,
do you remember that, or is that something?
No, I don't remember that. I had already moved away from there. I'm just going by what I have read about that, and that Albert Eugene was killed in 98, and it's an unsolved murder.
Is that
today.
Right? Is that right?
It was killed. Excuse me. It was killed out behind the bus that he lived in. Of course, his daddy, Chez, was in the nursing home.
Yeah, I was going to say that's about the time that his father died.
Chez died 5 months after
his
son
was
murdered.
I see.
Were they known to have, or supposedly known to have, monies that were there on the property at that time
or somewhere?
Yeah.
Well, you know. I can remember hearing the story. Of course, and Truman and I shared it with you, and mm-hmm. I think you and Greg had talked about it, about the grocery in Wrightsville, Georgia.
Right.
That Chez went to buy something, want to write a check, and the guy said, well, man, you're crazy. I ain't taking on this check. And he told him to call a certain man at the First National Bank in Atlanta.
Right.
Which he did, and said, if he writes you a check for $10,000, you know, you cash it and don't worry about it.
Well, we had a similar story while he was in Murfreesboro, where he had tried to buy some over at the local feed store. And same kind of experience, yeah.
Hmm. Well, it's, you know, Truman, as far as money being on the property, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. They could have thought that they had money, but you know, Albert Eugene had to have been born somewhere along the same time that I was born. I was born in 37. And he was, you know, I've read some excerpts where they said that he had three wives, is what I've heard, or what I've read.
Well, the last one I know he found and married at the nursing home.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that, but I find it kind of interesting, or kind of comical to a certain extent. He said that one of his wives, well, it had to be the second one, mm-hmm. because the first one was a knife thrower.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and he was the, Chez was the
target for a while.
Right,
kind of
right.
Kind of the opposite of the way it's supposed to be.
But anyway, it had to be the second one then that, there was a, he sold her for $1,000 to a farmer that was already sweet on her.
He sold his wife?
Yeah, he sold her to a farmer for $1,000. Of course, she was going to leave him anyway, and he was going to get something out of it.
That sounds like a pretty good deal.
So he got rid of it. I don't know. How much you
I'm
think
not going
to
comment on that.
How much you think I can get for Norma Jean when I get
her? Yeah, Tom, be careful.
Oh, let me tell you, if you were to sell Norma Jean, you could own the world, Tom. You could own the world.
Tom, we appreciate that firsthand yes. report.
Well, Greg, I tell you what, you know, I tried to get in when you were on before, but didn't quite get in there. But you know, sometimes I can remember things like they happened just yesterday.
Yes.
And when I run across the article that Norma Jean had here, and I told her, I said, hey, you know, that just stirred up a bunch in me. But anyway, I appreciate you letting me call in and talk about it. And Truman hang in there and tell Jackie I said hey.
You tell Norma Jean hey for me, Tom.
I'll certainly do it. And Greg, it was great talking to you. One of these days I'm going to meet you. Me and you, let's sit down and drink a cup of coffee together.
All right, we'll do
all
that.
All right, brother.
Will you let me go with you?
No.
Sure, Truman.
Okay. Well, if Greg
if
said no.
No, I don't want you to dominate conversation.
I'll just listen.
Y'all take care.
You too, Tom. See you.
Bye.
Want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Pearl and Howerton Automotive. And they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shevable, Tennessee. And that's about a 20-minute drive, and it's just on the left before you get to downtown Shevable or going to Pope's Restaurant, where Gary owns right now, and one of the best places in the world to eat. But if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take a ride down there. Get to meet the folks. Sit down and have a cup of coffee with them. Enjoy the day. Take a ride or two with the new cars that they have. Of course, we're talking Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC. Find out what you like. They'll give you a great deal, and you'll be glad that you went out there, especially on a beautiful day like today. I mean, how else could you spend a better time in upgrading your car problems that you may have right now? And believe me, when you drive one of their cars away, you'll have no problems.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
Play It Again Sports.
25% to 50% off a new shipment of scratch and dent fitness equipment is in at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane. Exercise bikes, ellipticals, treadmills, and more. 25% to 50% off. Save now before the deals are gone.
This is Steve Grimsley with Zippy Shell. Are you looking for storage? Perhaps you're preparing your home for sale, downsizing, or just in need of some extra space? Well, then you should give us a call. We offer convenient, affordable storage solutions right here in Rutherford County. We deliver a storage container to you, you pack it, and we'll pick it up and store your goods in our secure facility. We are locally owned and operated. To check out our grand opening specials, give us a call at 216-7879 or visit us at zippyshell.com. Save time, save money, save everything.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Good Neighbor Events from WGNS as we look ahead to this coming weekend. And there will be a household hazardous waste collection this coming Saturday. And that's at the City of Murfreesboro's facility at 4765 Florence Road. You know, that's where you get the mulch. This is for household hazardous waste. But keep in mind, this does not include oil-based paint. It will be from 8 until noon this coming Saturday morning. Again, the household hazardous waste collection is this coming Saturday morning from 8 until noon at the City of Murfreesboro facility over at 4765 Florence Road, the place where you get the mulch. The big thing to get across this coming weekend is when we go back to regular time. So when you go to bed Saturday night, set your clock back 1 hour. Oh yes, the musical Annie is at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. That's now through November 20th. Showtimes Thursday through Saturday evenings at 7:30 and Sunday matinees at 2. Annie through November 2nd at the Center for the Arts, 110 West College in Uptown Murfreesboro. And there's another Annie over in Woodbury. This is Irving Berlin's Annie Get Your Gun. And that's Friday and Saturday nights at 7:30 with a Sunday matinee at 2, now through November 19th. That's at the Arts Center of Cannon County at 1424 John Bragg Highway. This reminder, you need to enter the Bicentennial Christmas Parade. All of the parade regulations and entry form are on the WGNS website. Look across the top blue bar and tap on Parade. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather-eye. Sunny to partly cloudy this afternoon, high in the upper 60s. Tonight, mainly clear, low of 41. Sunny on Wednesday, high of 70. Wednesday night, slight chance of rain. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 70.
Before the cold winter wind blows, be sure to take care of your car. Bring it by and let us check the battery and coolant. We'll do a complete car check, look at tires, wipers, and more to make sure it's safe for the road. That's Todd's Complete Auto Care. We're on Southeast Broad Street, 962-9050.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's The Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
Today's guest, Greg Tucker.
And, well, he's really not a guest. It's kind of his show.
Oh, it's The Greg Tucker Show?
It's The Greg Tucker Show.
Welcome back to The Greg Tucker Show with Truman Jones.
Yes, okay. I'm an assistant.
I'm going to turn in a W-9. You keep talking about it like that.
What's a W-9? I don't have to turn in anything. Do you get paid for being on this show?
Not yet.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in Jackson Heights Plaza. They have something for everyone on their menu, from steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items that are unique to Blue. They have 6 items for lunch at just $6. Enjoy their Sunday Live Jazz Brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and the great Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the game on the big screen TVs, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. Be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. That's Blue Restaurant and Bar, owners Marty Brown and Greg Pogue. And I think we've got a caller on the line for Mr. Greg Tucker, The Greg Tucker Show. Welcome aboard, caller.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Tucker. This is Michael Shirley, and I sent you those pictures of the goat man. I emailed them to you a while back. And I just appreciated the story that I just heard.
Well, we used that one of those pictures, the one where they were in front of the gas station out on the Manchester Pike.
Yep, and I don't know, like I told you in my email, I don't know if that was the Red Fox camp or not, but as I mentioned, I didn't pay much attention when my dad and my great aunt were talking about those stories, and then after they both passed away, I regretted not paying better attention. But I appreciated the article and the conversation y'all just had, kind of put a little history behind those pictures that I have across.
Good. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I showed those pictures. I work with our 4-H program here in Rutherford County now, and mm-hmm. I show those pictures to our goat kids every year, kind of showing what they can do with something else they can do with their goats.
Yeah, there's a future in goats. If you want to go that way. Well, tell us I've always wondered about the goat market. And where the goats go that are raised here. You go up to the market in Woodbury?
I take a few there to the Woodbury. The better market, if you have a load of goats, is to take them to the sale in Columbia at the Farm Bureau's Tennessee Livestock Producers Sale Barn, because they actually have a graded goat sale there. Uh-huh. And it's the largest, I've been told, and that it's the largest goat sale east of the Mississippi.
Well, now, where are those goats going?
Almost all of those goats will go north, to the northeast, to the populations up there that are looking for the ethnic populations that are looking for the goat meat. And a lot of our goats stay local. Shelbyville there's a big demand for goat meat there with the Somalian population that works at the Tyson plant. Mm-hmm. And then here local, a lot of our producers just sell them directly off the farm to local people.
But a lot of them actually get loaded up and get a free ride up to the northeast, huh?
That's right. They go up there to meet the needs. We don't have enough. United States imports more goat meat than we sell. I mean, we don't have enough to meet the demand.
Well, now the brush goats, we call them, not the fancy ones, but the brush goats. They're part of that is going to the meat market?
Sure. In the past few years, there's the boar goats, which are what a lot of people see now, the white goats with the red head. They're being crossed in. They're from South Africa, but they have a real. They look more like steers. they're so big and thick. Mm. But I have heard that the goat man helped to create the Mitonic, the fainting goats in Tennessee. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. But the pictures, the goats that are in the pictures that I sent you, they look more like the Mitonic, the Tennessee fainting goats. that's what they look like. Of course, I don't think the fainting goats would be very good for pulling a cart. But
not along the highway with car traffic, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I wish I could see that, you know, have seen that cart being pulled around by those goats. I think it would be a neat sight to see.
Well, you don't want to be that old.
Yeah, that's right. but thank you again for the stories.
All right, very good. Thank you for calling.
You know, my wife sold some goats. She used to raise goats. But she wouldn't sell them because she's afraid that they would become food for somebody. So the last bunch that she sold, she made them swear that they would not be killed.
Oh, my goodness.
And you think they stuck by their word?
I wouldn't follow up and research that for her.
Well, now, let's see. Let's go from goats to politics.
To kind politics.
Kind of mixes a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to, there's a little bit of history that you and I got a chance to experience firsthand last week. You remember the fellows that used to play with Henry Mancini?
Yes, yes.
Wasn't that something?
That was one of the best concerts I have ever been to. The music, I tell you what, the people that are listening that did not make that concert, you're the biggest losers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was absolutely a fascinating night. I would sit there, and the seats are so comfortable at the United Methodist Church. They're pews, but they are not pew comfortable. They are just really
First
living
Methodist,
room comfortable.
Yeah.
And such the acoustics were so great there. In fact, a couple of the musicians even said that it's the best place they come to. But there was a big crowd there, but it was not packed like it should have been. Murfreesboro should have packed that place because it was one of the best evenings I've had in a long time.
Well, I particularly enjoy not only just the music for the music's sake, but to actually be able to reach back and have contact with something as significant in our history as the music of Henry Mancini.
Oh, yes.
The original voice of the Pink Panther, the saxophone, was there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow who played the trumpet and traveled with Henry Mancini just about brought the house down. It gave me goosebumps what he could do on that trumpet.
I actually closed my eyes, and I could just see everything so clearly because the music just settled right in me. It was unbelievable.
It was.
And you know, a couple people said that they were probably weren't going to go because it wasn't going to be the full orchestra there. You couldn't tell. I mean, they were so good. I mean, Frampton to be able to be the maestro sitting there at the as piano playing all that beautiful music and starting out with Gone with the Wind, the theme from Gone with the Wind. Unbelievable.
He teased the audience, and I had several people come to me and ask later, and I'm sure they were asking each other. They came to Tonton Fireworks, which is from one of the Pink Panther Peter Sellers, and he's in Hong Kong, and there's a car chase.
Mm-hmm.
But being in Hong Kong, they put all the fireworks and everything in it. In fact, I think the fireworks factory was burning or something and all this. And Henry Mancini wrote this music that made the sounds of the excitement of the fireworks and the car chase. And you remember that Max Frampton said, well, their percussionist was sick and couldn't be there.
Yeah.
And they had stopped at Shoney's and were just worrying about what they were going to do. And the waiter there at Shoney's said, well, I can play a little bit of percussion. And so he made out like they had invited him to come, and he was there. And they got into that, and the fellow playing what I call the xylophone, the keys with the little mallets, did that and was superb. And I bring that up because he is one of the regulars in the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra.
Oh, really?
And they didn't. Their first practice together was 3:30, the afternoon of the concert.
Unbelievable.
And this young man, I wish I could tell you his name, but he is a regular with the Symphony Orchestra. But that just was a real good illustration of the quality of the musicians we have in the orchestra, even without the Mancini visitors and such. He did that piece and got a real rousing ovation out of it, and you couldn't even see his sticks as he was doing that fireworks on that xylophone. We won't have that concert again for a while, but there will be a concert in early December, the Christmas concert.
Is it the third? Somewhere around there. It's the
first week, I think.
I may be wrong.
I hope you'll talk about it again before that date.
Oh, we're going to.
Get the date down.
Well, I guarantee you, I'm not going to miss it.
Yeah, that'll be quite a show. And that's always been one of the most popular, is the Christmas concert for the Symphony Orchestra. Now, you mentioned politics. We ought to talk a little about history, because I know if we get into contemporary politics, the phone lines will light up, and you and I will probably be off the air next week.
Let's don't do that.
But an interesting aspect, and what I thought was interesting, was it sounds a little bit like what we got now. And I was going back about 80 years ago, and found a period of time when the Republicans were fighting among themselves, as they do now, but a little more literally.
Was that here in Rutherford County?
That was here in Rutherford County.
I don't remember any Republicans being in Rutherford County until the last 15 or 20 years.
That's exactly the point I thought you'd help me make. Okay. 80 years ago, the Republicans held their county party convention,
mm-hmm.
or committee meeting, whatever you call it. And just as they were getting started, the first order of business was to elect a chairman for the local group, as has been done around here. And a fist fight broke out.
Surely not.
It was the newspaper account said hefty blows were thrown.
Mm-hmm.
And the Constable Lovern, some of us may remember, L-O-V-V-O-R-N, Lovern, same family, had a pool hall a few years later, I know.
Yes, I've known him.
Constable Lover.
Norris was a great friend and a great person for this community.
Well, the constable just happened to be there, almost like he had anticipated problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he rushed in, arrested five fellas.
He's probably a Democrat.
Arrested five and carried them off. Well, what a lot of people, if you stop and think a little bit about our history and what goes on, you'll appreciate that in the 1860s, during the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln
was a Republican.
A Republican, mm-hmm. Issued the Emancipation Proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the black slaves who were freed and their descendants were just very, very loyal for many years to the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
This continued really until the social programs of the New Deal and the migration FDR. To the North, mm-hmm. and such as that. But up until that time, the black vote was a Republican.
Mm.
And in 1932, the story as I found it was that the black Republicans in Rutherford County apparently had a majority of those mm-hmm. who were involved with the Republican Party. And when they got together to elect the chairman and then to elect the delegates to the state convention and eventually the delegates to the national convention and to express their support for Herbert Hoover, who was the incumbent in 1932, apparently the blacks had a candidate that they were going to put forward for the chairmanship. And all I can attest to is what the newspaper accounts offered of the time, but there was a strong opinion expressed that the fight was staged in order to break up things before they elected the chairman.
Wow.
And to intimidate a number of the voters. And when they resumed after the fight had been broken up and several arrests were made, a significant number of the blacks who had been present, and this was in the courthouse, did not come back. Were, I guess, intimidated or concerned and didn't come back. And there was a presence of local white citizens and voters. The most significant was a name many people probably heard, Beulah mm-hmm. Hughes. I've heard some of the old folks around the area say they thought Beulah Hughes was the only Republican in the county, at least. The Maples name. There were several Maples at the meeting, one of whom was elected secretary, and we're still
Republicans.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And S.A. Maples was elected to go to the convention. Miss Hughes turns out, served on the Republican National Committee from this area, and went to three of the national conventions for the Republicans in 28, 30, 32. Actually, I had on one occasion a visit with Herbert Hoover in the White House, and was on his group that advised regarding women's issues. Remember, the women had only been voting for about 10 or 12 years at that time, and she advised Herbert Hoover with respect to the women's vote in Tennessee. I found one account where she made some predictions that didn't come true. She thought Hoover could possibly carry some of this area. Because remember, East Tennessee always was going Republican back then. And the black vote, if it had come out, would have been significant for the Republicans at that time. Didn't happen, of course. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that was his first victory. And I think he won all but five or six states in that first election, Tennessee going for him at the time. But it's interesting to, you know, most of us think, well, the Republicans have just emerged around here in our lifetime. You and I can remember when the only elections that made any difference were the Democratic primary election.
That's right. It's the only one.
Yeah. And then everything else just kind of rolled through, and you would see on the ballot a name that generally had never heard of, and, you know, it'd be a Republican candidate because they were nominating, but, you know, there was not a significant presence.
You'd have to do a write-in if you wanted to vote for a Republican back then.
I imagine
it was that way.
It sure seemed that way.
Yeah, and if you came up and announced that you were a Republican going to vote, people would just stare at you.
Yeah, but prior to the Great Depression, there was a very significant minority of voters in the county or prospective voters who would have voted Republican and did on occasion vote Republican. I believe Tennessee actually went Republican in 1920. Someone could correct me on that, but I believe following World War One, and some of the bitterness about World War One and Woodrow Wilson and such, that Tennessee may have gone Republican. I just saw a suggestion of that, and I haven't really checked it. But if it did, I suspect again that that was influenced by the black vote at that time.
You know, it's funny how sections of the country can be one party or another, let's say a Democrat or a Republican, and their philosophies can be so polarized, yet they can still belong to the same party group. And I've always been amazed at that. And I think one of the areas that really showed the differences more than any other that I can think of was maybe in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. You had the Democrats, but you also had the Dixiecrats.
Right.
And they were completely polarized, especially in their political beliefs when it had to be for their own home soil. And it was so different back then as far as the Dixiecrats were considered conservatives. And, of course, the Democrats were considered even liberal during that particular time. And it's funny how a political party can flip-flop in their beliefs.
Well, I think Strom Thurmond from South Carolina kind of illustrates it. He began as a Democrat, then he was the Dixiecrat back in 48, and obviously became very prominent in the Republican Party in his later years as things evolved. And the party of Lincoln, the Republicans, and their solid hold on the black vote back in the early part of the 20th century just completely shifted.
Can you think of any course of events that could have caused the flip-flop between the Republicans and the Democrats over the years?
Truman probably started things moving that way when he took the color bias out of the military, but then and already the social programs of the Roosevelt era were moving the working class very much into the Democratic column, which included a lot of the black vote. And then I think the 60s is what really clinched it when you had
John
the fair
F. Kennedy
house.
Was really
Kennedy,
very strong in there.
And Kennedy started, but then of course Lyndon Johnson's the one that actually brought to pass the legislation. The equal employment, fair housing, the Voting Rights Act, and things like that, which even you and I would appreciate that, you know, that gave protections that weren't there before.
It should have been there a long time ago.
It should have been there. And now, I don't do well discussing current politics, but I'm not sure I could tell you where either party is in some of those areas now. It's kind of
Think it's one of those things that's just all over the place.
Right.
And unfortunately, the way the media is now, you can have a catchphrase or something like that will go, and then all of a sudden everybody's moving one way or the other. But, you know, if you're going to have – I don't think you can have a party – platform that's solid anymore. I don't believe it's possible.
No, I agree with you. And the way things have changed, just looking at the presidential election, Tennessee participated up through at least the 60s in the selection of the candidates because there was a convention and Tennessee representatives went to that convention. And beginning, I guess, in the early 70s, late 60s, that process began to change such that now the conventions are nothing more than just an inauguration of the candidate. And we have given to those states that run early primaries or early polls or whatever it is such influence over who the candidate's going to be. I mean, I was thinking driving in today that a smart party might ought to hide their best man or best woman and put out a bunch of others to take all the flack, and then down mid-year before the elections, let their man or woman step out, because I don't see how any of them can survive the media, kind of running the gauntlet through the media over that period of time, the money, the cost, and the kind of false leads that you get out of that. You know, the first one, somebody's the leader, and then, you know, in 3 weeks, it turns over completely.
It runs all over the place right now. And if we could just have one person just stand up above all the politics and above all of the uproar that the media tries to cause, and of course the media is making money off of it. The more attention they can get, the more monies that they can rake in for their particular studio. You know, unfortunately, it has come. We've always heard all our lives in church, money is the root of all evil. Well, I guarantee you, we the root, it's sprouting all over the place, and it's become really unfortunate, because it's really hurting our country right now, and we need to be more in unison instead of being so divisive and everybody worrying about what's going to happen with them when this next election comes.
Bothers me too that, for example, in the state governor's race, the media or others will look at the money available to each candidate and then predicts that the winner will be the one who's got the most money.
Right.
And we've seen that in a couple of recent races. And darned if they don't seem to be right. Is that the only thing that matters these days?
You know, the first convention I can remember was many years ago when Adlai Stevenson... Well, first in the Democrats, it was Stevenson against Kefauver. Remember that?
Right.
That was really. I mean, there were some great oratory, some great speeches in that. There was a lot of passion.
That's probably 1952.
Yeah, there's a lot of passion in it. And then after they made a deal and Stevenson got the nomination, I heard some of the best speeches I've ever heard in my life. When Stevenson was attacking Eisenhower and vice versa. I mean, that was politics at its best. And now, and you were talking about switching probably the most powerful Republican in your lifetime, in my lifetime, was Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
Ronald Reagan was a Democrat. He started as a Democrat.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like that, it's hard for them to hold to the parties platform if they don't mix with theirs, and I can understand somebody wanting to go to another area. And let's get away from politics for a little while. Let's talk about Stan McNabb, one of my favorite subjects. And Stan provides quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. And they have a large selection that ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicle. And only at Stan McNabb's do they provide free oil changes and new tires for the life of the vehicle.
State Representative Mike Sparks invites you out this Thursday for a special event celebrating First Lady Speaker of the House Beth Harwell. It starts at 5 p.m. this Thursday at Cedar Crest Golf Course on Mona Road off Jefferson Pike. Tickets are just $25 at the door, plus music by the Coolers and a chili cook-off at the event celebrating Speaker of the House Beth Harwell this Thursday, 5 p.m. at Cedar Crest Golf Course on Mona Road.
Paid for by citizens-elect Mike Sparks, Preston Sparks Treasurer.
If you want to get some barbecue, I tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock, $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
You are listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now back to Truman Jones.
Well, welcome back to The Greg Tucker Show. And
I have a non-political recollection of the 1952 conventions.
Yes.
My family at the time was living in Sunny Slope, Arizona. And the newest thing anywhere was this television. My parents, after holding off for a while, finally invested in a little television set. I can remember it was made by Hoffman. My mother had been told or heard that her children would go blind if they stared at a television screen.
Was it a 12-incher?
A little bit bigger than that. Yeah. Probably not much bigger, though. But she had been warned that it would damage the eyes of her children if...
We
she didn't
that.
Get a special screen, so for years I thought black and white was green because she got a screen with a green tint. But they brought it home and set it up, and I was excited because I had heard about television. And it was in the summer of 52, and I turned it on, and night and day there was nothing but these people in a big hall making speeches. And I was about 5-6 years old. And this went on for a couple of weeks. Then it seemed like it was a little break. And then it picked up and went on for another week or so as the second convention geared up. The most interesting thing of that whole first experience with television was Betty Furness doing the commercials for refrigerators and stoves and washing machines.
Great memory.
For Westinghouse. Betty Furness was, at the time, a former Miss America. Mm-hmm. And if it hadn't been with the commercials, I think I would have written off TV completely at that time. But that was my initial experience. And I thought, this TV doesn't amount to much. I'd rather go outside and play.
Well, it is a little bit better now as far as the TV. I mean, not the shows or anything. But, we get to see all these old movies of stuff like that. But, of all of the conventions, the one that's probably got more press than any other was the one in Chicago.
1968.
Yes.
I was there.
You
the
were?
68 convention.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, I had press credentials from a college newspaper, which gave us a little bit of access and also a little bit, very little protection. But, yeah, I covered the street activity in 68 and had occasion to have contact with Abbie Hoffman and Jerry Rubin and the yippies of the period. Yeah, and I could tell you a great story about some of that, but that's not Rutherford history.
No.
But
But that's Daley history.
Yeah, that's Mayor Daley.
Yes.
Mayor Daley.
And you know, they made some disparaging remarks about him in Chicago, remember, during one of the speeches? And the TV was on his face when he was commenting back to them, and I don't think the cameras probably had wished they hadn't been
on. I was not covering activity in the hall, but keeping up with it as best I could through other media contacts. I remember that someone did make some critical remarks about Chicago and the way they were handling things, and Daley had packed the balcony with some of his supporters, his loyalists, and he apparently gave a signal, and the balcony started chanting something or another, or commotion, just drowned out all the speech and everything. So it wasn't his convention, it was the Democrats, but he certainly could control it, and did control it.
He was a very powerful man. But tell me about Hoffman, because he was an interesting character.
Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Mark Grossman, or there was four or five fellas who called themselves Yippies.
They're more communistic, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah, their politics were over the edge. But they were masters of media, staging stunts and all. And the whole Yippie thing was only these four or five guys. Mm-hmm. And I had, again, covering some, doing some news media work. Months before, I had come across them in connection with one of the early campaigns, McCarthy's campaign, where they turned up. And again, they didn't support McCarthy, although he was the liberal candidate, if you remember, the alternative candidate for a while. They just more or less destroyed any ability he had to communicate or make his speech or whatever. They were disruptive, would be the best thing. So I knew him. Hoffman was a firebrand who kept urging the crowd to make trouble.
And they did.
Yeah. And there was Bobby Seale was more the, he was one of the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
He was part of that too. And because I was college newspaper, they were tolerant. I was able to kind of hang around the group and know what was going on. But I remember the police, I believe he was the chief of police, but if not, he was the precinct chief there where the problems were. And he offered to come in and talk to the leadership of the group. Mm-hmm. And I was right on the fringe of the so-called leadership of the group. And he came in and started talking, and Hoffman grabbed the microphone and said, "Now that we have taken hostage the so-and-so police chief," and I and about four others took the mic away from him and pulled him back.
Good.
And stopped that. I don't know where that would have gone, but I remember thinking, this is just going too far. And even the, you know, there had been a pretext of, you know, we'll be glad to talk. You know, all they wanted to do was sleep in the park, not have to sleep on the street, that kind of thing. But Hoffman was looking for a way to turn it into chaos.
It seemed like the press, though, just kind of, for some reason, took hold with him.
Well,
and
they
he was
had,
on every time you looked at
yeah, the
news.
Underground media had just become prominent then. The underground's what we call it then. The alternative newspapers and things like that. And they started putting stuff out in those. And again, this is four or five guys up in Washington.
Right.
They started sending out stuff just by mail to all these underground papers. And these papers all over the country were printing it. And it made it sound like there were thousands and thousands of these Yippies, Youth International Party, and they were going to have their convention, alternative convention. Mm. So kids from campuses all over the country and other people came. And, of course, when we got there, there were, you know, there wasn't anything at all going on except the Democratic convention. So everything ended up on the street, you know, without any kind of plan or organization or what have you.
It's amazing how irresponsible reporting and news can make such impact in a negative way on this country.
And then and Daley and his police force made a mistake too. They turned it into, you read the history books, they overreacted. They call it a police riot, and some of what I saw clearly was that. And then about midweek, after some conversations, the police backed off and says, "Okay, you people stay in the park. You can do your demonstrations, do your politicking or whatever, but stay out of the street." And they agreed to go that way. up until the point. Dick Gregory, of course, right there at the end, took them down the street right to the convention hall.
You know, and he was here at the university at one time, don't you?
What, speaking?
Dick Gregory. Yeah, yeah. He put on a performance here at the university, well, which we have alluded to before.
Yeah, I spent quite a bit of time with him, both in Chicago, and then he came to Nashville that fall after the thing. And I, again, with my media contact, media work, was involved with him. Dick Gregory for president.
Mm-hmm,
he actually ran for president. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is something that we probably need to address in the future, because this is really interesting. I mean, it's not anything that you're partially one side or the other. I mean, you're actually hearing it from the person who actually got to see it. And, that's something I look forward to. And unfortunately, Brian has given us the sign, Greg. So
have we used up our time again?
Again, which is, it seems like we do every time we come on. Do want to let you know that tomorrow we'll have Bill Patterson on, Thursday, Melissa Tuggle, and that is going to be a great show. You're talking about a lady who's flown in helicopters and gone to help the people who are wounded and really a great sports fan, and she has some great stories to tell us. And on Friday, I know Brian is really going to be interested in this, because he'll be bringing his jug, because we're going to have John Whittemore and Jim Simpson. And we're going to talk about the history of moonshining in Short Mountain. And we're talking about not just 5 or 10 years. We're talking about well over 100, probably close to 200 years of moonshining in Short Mountain. And it's going to be interesting.
See, I'll be listening for that one.
And we'll see you tomorrow, 2 o'clock.